Welcome, scary story.
Scary Stories by Peter Bernard. The Peripheral People, read by Madeline Starr. I'm Joanne, a 21-year-old college senior living in the Northeast. Just to let you know where I'm coming from before I get started. Back when I was a freshman, my best friend was my classmate, Deanna. We had been besties since high school, and we'd been planning to attend the same college since junior year. I haven't heard from her in a long time, but she's the reason I'm writing this all down now, because I just got the news that Deanna was killed in what is being called a traffic accident. I was also once in an incident that was officially declared a traffic accident with Deanna years ago. I know that what happened to us that night was no accident, so I doubt what happened to her this time was one either. And I think someone, or something, intends for the next accident to happen to me. I sit here typing this in my dorm room on the top floor of the building. I put my desk by the window so that as I work, I can gaze out in front of me on part of the school campus, then the pasture and forest beyond it. Everything feels so safe and secure and sane here that I'm drawn toward pretending that the insanity never actually happened years back. Yet now, today, I realize that Deanna is gone forever. And I know that the unbelievable story I'm about to tell you actually happened. I don't expect any of you to believe me, but if I die in a supposed accident, I hope you please reread what I'm about to write. Okay, like I said, Deanna and I were very close. We took largely the same classes. We hung out after classes. We hung out in each other's dorm rooms. We even went on double dates together. In fact, it had been a running joke on campus that we were a package deal. If you asked one of us out, you'd better have a date for the other or get ready to be turned down. We had kind of settled into a regular dating pattern with two guys, who I kid you not, were named Brad and Chad. We weren't in love with Brad or Chad. That was actually one of the things we liked best about them at the time. They were BFFs with each other, in a way that was a lot like me and Deanna. When we went out, they would be talking to each other, and that let me and Dee have our own fun uninterrupted. The main function of Brad and Chad was to keep other guys from hitting on us, which they did a good job of since they were both really big and athletic dudes. Also, they seemed kind of funny and smart. In the few times we ever actually spoke to either of them, that is. Dee and I felt so comfortable with them that when they asked us to go camping with them for a weekend, we didn't even pause to think about it before saying yes. They're Christian boys who go to church most Sundays, so we didn't even consider that they'd behave like anything but gentlemen. I had never been camping before, and Dee had only been once. She told us it was some kind of official camping site with lots of security, and her parents had rented a small house. A house? Brad shouted incredulously. Well, a cabin. A cabin in the woods. To Brad, she was still saying house. I tell you what, girl, he bellowed while chuckling. Where we're going, you ain't gonna be sleeping in no house. A few days before leaving, the boys took us to buy camping gear. When I saw how much everything was going to end up costing, I tried to back out of the deal. I was working a part-time job and my parents were sending money, but I was still operating on a very tight budget and didn't have this much that I could spend on entertainment. To my surprise, the boys gallantly insisted on paying for both of us. Deanna seemed to be assuming they would, but I was kind of shocked and shaken. While the other three were talking, I got lost in my own thoughts. Could the boys have more feelings for us than we have for them? C- Could I have been taking Chad for granted? I resolved to spend the weekend assessing Chad as potential long-term, serious boyfriend-type material. I looked at a picture of him on my phone, and he certainly was a good-looking guy. Why had I not noticed that before? "Ask Joanne what she thinks," said someone. Oh, it was Chad saying it. Chad, whose photo I was staring at. I quickly tried to dismiss the image before anyone saw what I was doing, but nervously missed my mark and enlarged the photo instead. Horrified, I shoved the phone in my back jeans pocket and tried to sound normal as I said, "Ask Joanne what she thinks about what?" And so that was how our trip started out, as we piled into Chad's 4x4 and headed out to the forest. We were excited, nervous, and for the first time with Brad and Chad, possibly feeling a bit romantic. In a cautious, tentative way, I mean. The hours flew by, unlike any time before that I could remember. Our conversation was completely four-way. I think it was a 3 or 4 hour drive, but I'm not sure. Suddenly, Brad was pulling off the road and parking our ride in a weird place under some trees. "Why are we parking here?" Dee asked him.
"So that the cops don't see the vehicle from the road, duh."
Both boys chuckled. "Wait, why would we be hiding from the cops?" I asked, annoyed. "Are we gonna rob the First National Squirrel Bank, then try to make a fast getaway?" The boys explained that the place we were heading is about to be opened as a national park soon, but for now, it's not a place we were technically allowed to go. At worst, we could get a ticket, not jail time, but it still made the most sense not to be too obvious about where we were going. I sort of felt that this was something that should have been mentioned to us before, but Chad just rolled his eyes. I looked to Dee for support, but she was already unloading the gear with Brad. So, whatever. We were about to go break federal law with the two good Christian boys. My head was spinning a bit. After the first 15 minutes of hiking through the woods, my head was spinning a whole lot more. "Exactly how much longer is it until we reach the Blair Witch House?" I asked sarcastically. Deanna complained that she was getting all cut up by the branches and bushes. Then I realized I was too. It was only 5 minutes more, though, when the woods opened to a small clearing which formed a sort of dirt beach, only about 30 feet wide and surrounded by trees and grass on both sides, leading up to a beautiful pond that fed a small river, with the pond, in turn, being fed by the most gorgeous little waterfall I'd ever seen. Almost 18 or 20 feet high, white water cascading over rocks and down, making the most soothing sound I think I had ever heard in my life. If this wasn't paradise, it certainly seemed modeled on it. Both Dee and I were stunned, and I remember falling on my knees, partially in relief that the trek was over, and partially to devote more energy in drinking this scene all in. Absolutely nobody was around anywhere. When I got up the energy, I looked around in all 360 degrees around us, and I could see nothing made by humans anywhere. How did these two boys find this magical grotto? I wondered. And why wasn't it already crowded and exploited? Oh, that's right, because it wasn't officially open to the public yet. I decided to turn off my rational mind and just enjoy being there, since by next year it would probably be overrun with tourists and graffiti. The boys offered to make our tents for us, and they didn't have to offer twice. Dee and I went into the trees and changed into our bathing suits, then jumped in the water to cool off. The coldness woke me up a bit, and it felt just indescribably amazing. The sun was going down, but there was still plenty of light, and everything had a kind of orange glow. "Magic," Deanna said. "What did you say?" I asked, even though I had heard what she said. "Magic," she continued. "Magic waterfall, magic sunset, magic campgrounds. I half expect to see fairies and gnomes pop out of a hole in the ground." "Don't say that," I shot back, with genuine nervousness. "That's not something to even joke about. I swear, if some kind of creature popped out of the ground, I'd wet myself, Dee. Deanna playfully splashed me with water and teased. Ooh, look it, you wet yourself. As I screamed and laughed and splashed her back. But when I was looking at Dee from an angle 90 degrees from the waterfall, I could have sworn I saw a fully grown person standing right there in the fall. Startled, I gasped and turned to look directly at the white water flowing down. But now the dark figure in the middle was no longer there. My head told me it had been an optical illusion, but my heart seemed to think it was real enough. It kept beating as fast and crazy as Ty Segall on drums. Deanna stopped horsing around and asked me what was wrong. I started telling her that I saw an illusion, but when I turned my head toward her, I could see the figure there again out of the corner of my eye. Deanna asked me to explain further what I was saying, but it was just too freaking weird. Instead, I told her I was just hungry and got out of the water to head back to the boys. Things went back to being fun for a while after that, and we had a decent enough dinner. It was when we were talking and roasting s'mores on the fire that I let down my guard and accidentally held my face 90 degrees to the waterfall. I saw the figure again and then turned my head away quickly because I didn't want to see. Wait, was it two figures this time? So I turned to deliberately hold my head at that angle again. No. It wasn't two figures in the falls. It was three figures in the falls. Dee, I see the figure again, but this time he has friends. Deanna rolled her eyes as the boys looked quizzically at the both of us. I tried to explain. There are people in the waterfall staring at us, but you can only see them out of the corner of your eye. Both boys started laughing, thinking I was telling them a creepypasta or something. Deanna put on her scary voice and said, "Ooh, the scary peripheral people, tonight on Scary Stories Theater." I glared at her, and Chad stopped laughing. "Hey, you're not joking, are you?" he asked me. I was so relieved he was on my side that I leaned into him. He put his arms around me, and for a second, I felt safe. Until I saw out of the corner of my eye that there were now four people standing in the waterfall. "We need to go," I announced, getting up and throwing sand on the fire. "We need to go now, like 10 minutes ago." Everyone protested. "It's not safe to go through that forest at night." "How do you know?" "There could be bears in the forest." "At least I can see a bear when I look directly at it. I'll take my chances." My stuff was packed, so while they complained, I started packing their stuff too. "I'm looking right at the falls. I see nothing." "You need to look at it sideways, at a 90-degree angle, like I told..." Splash. Something jumped into the water. Then something else, a much larger and longer splash. Or was it two or three more splashes? I can't see splashes. I can't see where that happened," said Chad in a stunned voice. I turned his head with my hands, 90 degrees to the falls. I asked him what he saw. Four of them, he responded nervously, wading toward us. Dee and Brad tried to hold their heads at the same angle. Where are they? They're getting out of the water, screamed Brad in shock, and I turned to look at him just in time to see something invisible twist his head completely around. Run, screamed someone. I ran to the forest, leaving my stuff right there. After a few minutes, I could tell that Chad and Dee were running with me. Dee occasionally screamed for Brad and asked what just happened, so I could tell she didn't see what Chad and I saw. I don't know how Chad knew which way to go, but when we cleared the trees, the truck was right there where we had left it. We piled in and Chad started the motor and maneuvered the truck away from the forest and over toward the highway. Deanna said we can't leave without Brad. Chad put the drive into neutral, put his head in his hands, and cried. "Chad," I spoke softly. "Chad, honey, we should get away from here. Do you want me to drive?" He looked up at me, sobbing. Through his tears, he choked out a few words indicating that if we had been followed, we would have heard it back in the forest. He said he needed to collect himself before driving. All through this, Deanna was panicking in the back seat and getting louder and louder. Suddenly, she shouted, "There they are!" Chad shouted that he didn't see anything, and I spun my head around, paying attention to my peripheral vision, until I saw them. There were three of them. They were naked. They were us. It looked like me, Dee, and Chad, calmly strolling naked out of the forest, with blank expressions on their faces. "Drive!" we both shouted, and Chad screeched the truck into maximum speed, as fast as he possibly could. I don't think he saw them, but I do think he believed that we saw them. We were back on the two-lane highway in a few minutes, and Brad kept us going around 80 while Dee and I watched out the back window and saw nobody following us. "I'll slow down when we see some other traffic," Chad said to nobody who cared. "Does anyone have their cell phone? I left mine back in the tent," said Chad. "It wasn't getting any reception out there." I had mine with me still, and it was getting about a bar and a half, so I called 911 immediately. "Don't, and I repeat, don't tell them we saw monsters or naked versions of ourselves or anything," warned Chad. "Just tell them we were attacked by four meth heads or cult members or something, and that we think three of them might still be following us." "And tell them Brad is missing," insisted Deanna, confirming my suspicion that she hadn't seen his murder. I think I told the cops everything I was supposed to, including that we were being pursued, although I didn't have any idea if we actually were. The dispatcher gave us directions to the nearest precinct station, and I shouted them out to Chad. She told me they were sending a police car in our direction. They'd be heading toward us on the highway's other lane. When the phone call ended, there was nothing left to say. I put my head in my hands and just cried for a while. I tried to be quiet about it for Deanna's sake in the back seat. By the time I opened my eyes, my vision was entirely blurred with tears. But still, I saw it. Or her. Or me. There I was, in my peripheral vision, naked, running alongside of the 4x4. I looked at the speedometer. It read 55. I looked out the passenger seat window and saw nothing but the passing scenery. I looked forward, and there, to my right, there was peripheral me, running impossibly fast. I started laughing. Everything seemed so funny. I laughed so hard that I felt nauseous. Then I realized, with my left peripheral vision, that naked Chad was also pacing the car outside the driver's window. The crash of glass was loud and sudden. Peripheral Chad reached in and grabbed real Chad by his hair and started trying to pull him out of the car. Deanna screamed. I'm not sure why I didn't. Chad struggled to control the steering wheel with his knees while beating the thing off with both fists. I tried to grab the steering wheel, but then my window burst open, and while I shielded my eyes from the flying glass, something grabbed my hair and started pulling. I swung my forearm into her face, but she surprised me by biting down hard. Blood squirted out of my arm in several places, and I screamed, more in anger than anything else. I flew into a rage and totally went into berserker mode on that monster out the window. While flailing about, I saw that Deanna was also fighting her double as Chad tried to swerve left and right to throw the doppelgangers off the vehicle. Between Chad's stunt driving and our fury, both Deanna's and my double were thrown clear of the highway and into the bushes along the roadside. I turned to see how Chad was doing, and while I stared directly at him, I saw my boyfriend's neck get bent and cracked, and suddenly our car had no driver. We swerved and spun out of control as the headlights of the oncoming police car appeared first in front of us, then behind, then in front, then behind again, while the entire world went in a screaming circle. We smashed so hard into the police car that one of the officers died on the spot. The other was completely uninjured, and I'm told he got me and Dee to the hospital, saving our lives. For a while, anyway. It was 3 weeks later that I woke up in the hospital. Police questioned me repeatedly in the first few days, seemingly wanting to figure out how they could pin the deaths on one or both of us. Poor Deanna never really recovered. Her parents stuck her in some home, and I never spoke to her again. Her physical injuries were mild compared to mine, but her mind completely snapped. Yes, I live in a wheelchair now, but I wouldn't have traded places with poor Dee for $1 million. It took her years in the home before they felt she was well enough to release into her parents' care. Years since she'd been out of the institution. Years since she traveled on that highway. That same highway. The only highway that connects this part of the world with any place else that people live. The highway I'd have to ride on if I ever wanted to leave here. I've shuttled from the hospital to my dorm, to school, but never left this small area. My parents even came out here to see me for Christmas, since I told them I wasn't well enough to travel. Now, they call my unwillingness to leave here my phobia, or my superstition, and they're losing patience with me. Why, I ask you, why would creatures appear from a waterfall or anywhere else? Creatures who appear to look exactly like us, yet want to kill us. They don't seem to want to take our place. Nobody is taking Deanna's place. Nobody took Brad or Chad's places. The naked killers were never seen again, and nobody believed anything I told them about what happened. What happens to the peripheral people after they kill us? And what happens to me after school is done? Do I make a life here in this college town, or do I try to escape? Even the airport is a 3-hour drive on the highway. I had a dream once of sky gliding out of here, and another of escaping using a hot air balloon. None of these things seem feasible in the waking world, at least not on my budget. And so, I sit here on the top floor of my dorm, looking out the window onto the campus and the pasture beyond, and the forest beyond that. It relaxes me to watch the tree leaves rustling in the breeze, especially on a night like this one. Except that each time I turn away, I could swear I see a figure standing in the tree line. There. Do you see it?
Come back.